This is season two of the Books as Bad as Twilight podcast,
where we're reading Harry Potter and the Cursed Child by Jack Thorne.
Visit us at our website, www.babatpodcast.com.
Get lost with us in the magical world of Harry Potter.
Not
season two.
Oh, wait, I should probably open to my notes, too, before we even...
Yeah, because I have no chapter summaries for these.
Great.
I was really bad. I thought I wrote them.
I am a
there's no chapter summaries from here until the end of the play. So get ready to get creative.
All good.
You know why, though? Because I just, like, sped through these because I was invested into the story time. Yeah. So it took me to Act 3, Scene 11, to become invested in this story.
Sounds legit.
That is a bad problem to have.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah.
Just a little. But, you know, is what it is. All right, shall we begin?
I think we should, Danielle.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Books as Bad as Twilight podcast. My name is Danielle.
And I'm Brittany.
And today we are continuing on our magical trek through...
What's that when you, like you slosh through things and it starts with a T and...
Trudge?
Like, yes.
We're trudging
through this.
Good word.
Trudging. Good word that I didn't know.
But you at least thought of it. You were like, I know it's
you
a
said,
word.
You said, trekking. I was like, there's another one where it's like you're in a swamp and it's like really hard and mucky.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
That's literally what it feels like. Oh, Brittany.
Adjectives.
It's like, I'm good at it.
Is that? No, it's a verb, not an adjective.
That's what I meant.
No, I said adjective.
I know, but I agreed with you. So. Maybe we can just agree that we both messed up and that, you know, and we're not starting over.
No,
this is going in the pod.
I like this one.
So,
well, it depends on who it is.
That's true. That's true. All right, folks. So today we are finishing up with Act 3, which means we're reading Scene 11 through the end, which I believe is Scene 21.
Is it 21?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, 21.
21. Cool. Yes, before we begin, let's quickly talk about our sponsor.
Oh, yes. Audible. Please do.
Audible.com has over 180,000 titles for you to choose from. And when I say titles, I mean audiobooks. And today, our episode is sponsored by Audible.com. If you go to audibletrial.com/BABAT, you can get a free 30-day trial as well as a free audiobook of your choice. So once again, that is audibletrial.com/BABAT for a 30-day trial, free 30-day trial, and an audiobook of your choice.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us what your first choice of using the Audible trial is? We want to know what you're listening to and reading.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, indeed.
Indeed.
Whoa, Brittany.
I don't know what that was. Yeah. Sorry, I apologize.
It's like, Brittany, this is a family-friendly show.
No, it's not.
But it's not.
It most definitely is not family-friendly.
No, it's not.
I hope my family doesn't listen to it.
Doesn't your mom listen, or does she just like our posts?
She just likes our posts.
Okay.
She doesn't know how to listen.
Aw.
Well, no, she does, but she listened to our intro.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, there's too much laughing. It's very loud. I'm not going to listen. Like, it's okay, Mom.
Come on, Mom.
She's so funny.
Well, you know.
My little brother listens a lot. Really? I don't know if my older brother does.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, at least we have some listeners.
Hi, Dylan.
At least you're out there. Thank you for being out there. So, shall we get started?
Mm-hmm. So, we left off in Act 3, Scene, 10. Accountant here. Hi, how's it going? When Scorpius just fixed their mistake. Yes. He, like, met up with Snape and Hermione and Ron, and they went back, fixed all the mistakes, and he popped out of the black lake going, oh my god, Albus, you're alive!
I love you! It's Harry!
You're alive! Everyone's alive, and we're all back to normal! And everyone's like, what the hell is wrong with you, Scorpius? And he's like, it's okay!
Oh, Scorpius. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a gem.
What a gem.
And he says that he lost the time turner.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
That is important.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So this is where we pick up in Act 3, Scene 11, Hogwarts, the Slytherin dormitory. Mm-hmm. Do you have a one sentence? Are you going to wing
do
it?
Do I? Hang on. Let's see. Harry Potter and the time it went from a 1 to a 10.
Okay.
I know that probably doesn't make sense, but I think Harry's temperament went from a 1 to a 10 in a very short amount of time.
Ooh.
I know.
Go ahead. What are your notes on that then?
Well, my notes are from page 203.
Uh-huh.
Harry's talking to Albus, just for context. Harry and Albus are discussing what's just happened and, you know, trying to smooth out the relationship. And it says there's a note or scene direction on page 203 on the beginning or on the top where it says Harry failing to contain his anger. Basically, they're having a discussion where they're talking about Gryffindor and Slytherin. Albus says, "Green is a soothing color, isn't it?" And he's talking about how Gryffindor rooms are red and it said to send you a little mad, blah, blah, blah. And do you remember this?
Yes, I do. Yeah. But I think that's more so Albus trying to make conversation.
Oh, no, I think so, too. Oh, okay. No, yeah, I agree.
It's poor.
It's very poor.
Way to go, Albus.
Yeah, I agree.
It's green.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Red makes you angry. Green is nature and right. soothing.
Exactly,
You're
yeah.
such a loser.
I mean... We can agree on that. Mm-hmm. Like, but then it's just fine. It's just kind of funny because, so in the first stage direction, I forgot to read this. It says, Harry enters and looks at his son, full of anger, but cautious not to let it spill. And then, like I said, the next page, it says, Harry failing to contain his anger. And I'm like, whoa. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the kid's just making conversation with you and you're flipping the F out. Calm down, Harry.
Yeah, but...
What?
He comes into the room
yeah.
to talk to him about this. So obviously he's angry and
right.
Albus is trying to divert it, mm-hmm. divert the conversation.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, can you explain to me why you tried to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So Albus is trying to skirt the discussion. So I understand I'm not a parent, but a parent will
right.
become irritated really quickly.
Right.
Because he's 14. He's not like a 5-year-old going, oh, I didn't take a cookie. You know, like there's chocolate all over your face.
It's like, Albus?
Albus!
Stop. That's amazing. Oh my gosh. See, that would be such a better play. If like, it was like.
It was like Alvin and the Chipmunks. Did you get my text about listening to it at 1.5 speed?
No.
I sent you a message.
Oh, I didn't get it.
I'm editing the podcast, listening at 1.5, and I'm laughing hysterically because it sounds like we're chipmunks.
That's awesome.
It's so funny.
Yes, I love it. One day, folks, we're going to be releasing an episode, all chipmunks, all day. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I'm actually really sad.
I'm not kidding. I was saying because I thought maybe you wouldn't like it, but now I'm curving. Not sure, but yeah. Would you like that, listeners? If so, let us know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So go on about your note about him going from 1 to 10.
No, I just thought it was just kind of funny, the stage direction, because I do agree with you. If Albus is messing around, because
mm-hmm.
I know personally I've been in that situation where you're just angry about something and you want to talk about it. And then the person's like trying to like change the subject.
Yeah.
And you're like, really? Stop it. So I get that, but it's just kind of funny how, like, the stage direction is, like, cautious not to let it spill, and so quickly, like, failing to contain his anger at something so many, like, I feel like this would eventually happen, but, like, they barely said, like, a few words to one another, and
yeah.
I just thought it was funny.
This scene definitely shows the struggling relationship between Harry and Albus.
Yeah.
Because, he's, like, Harry's saying... I didn't volunteer for adventures. I was forced into it. You did something reckless, something really stupid and dangerous, something that could have destroyed everything. I know. Albus wipes away a tear, and Harry notices it, takes a breath. He pulls himself back from the brink of absolute explosion. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and before that, we see Harry saying, of course it's unfair, Albus. Don't you think I know about that? When Albus is trying to justify him trying to save Cedric. Mm. Harry, I was there. I saw him die. But to do this, to risk it all for this.
Right.
Like, that's really, like, it's showing Albus's age, first of all, being 14. Yeah. Shows Harry's maturing. Like, before the point in this play, he has been treating Albus as a friend, not as a father, you know? And that's how I see it. He doesn't understand how to balance fatherhood with this rebellious kid. Because James isn't like this, neither is Lily. Is Lily?
Yeah, you're right.
Lily. And even everyone has been saying you need to be his father. You know, Dumbledore said it. Ginny said it, you know. And it's just, this is where it's actually having a serious conversation. Because Albus specifically says, you were, really? You were scared? And Harry's like, yes. Like, why wouldn't you think that? You know, I think that's, it's really showing the relationship between the father and the son at this point.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think that's one of my issues with this play, is that what you just said about how he's not being a parent, he's being like a friend to his son. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is that, like, what you just said about him being rebellious, but when is Albus... do you think he's actively rebelling, or is it because, I mean, he is actively rebelling.
Yeah.
But, like, in the sense that he was sorted into Slytherin, and he almost feels like it's just like, it's like kind of like you're expected to do certain things, mm-hmm. and you almost don't want to do them because people expect them of you. Like, do you think it's out, like, it just feels weird to me, like, that this play is getting at this idea that, like you said, that Harry's trying to be a friend and not a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's trying to say, well, and it, spoilers, it kind of gets toward that, toward the end of the play, where he's like, well, I never had a father to base.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just a BS thing, I think, for him to be like, to think that he can skirt by being a friend.
Well, he says that when he tries to give him the blanket, too,
right,
doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But 14 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I disagree. He shouldn't have.
Well, yeah, there's
a whole, you can never be your child's best friend.
Right, right.
You know, like, it doesn't work. You have to be structured and be a disciplinarian and make sure your emotions are checked, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, well, that's how I was raised, you know? Like, you show love, and when you're angry, you are stern, but you can't fly off the handle like this.
Right, right.
So, I do think Albus was... See, I think Albus, there are these expectations, and he's meeting the wrong expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think because he was sorted into Slytherin, people probably expected him to be more rebellious, and therefore he is more rebellious.
Gotcha.
Versus
yeah.
the expectations of him being a Potter, and therefore he has to be heroic
right.
and brave and, like, all that type of stuff. So he's following to the other's, like, expectations. And I think Harry saw that coming. So he's
right.
trying to overcompensate
right,
by being
right.
his friend.
Right.
And I think that's how it played out up until this point.
Yeah. And so I will tell you, I'm having a hard time now that you're saying that out loud. I'm kind of like, oh, like, I guess when you put it that way, I get it. But honestly, like, all of this drama that's going on, for me at least, is just so fabricated. Like, I can tell exactly where they're going with it. And that's why, for me, like, it didn't even occur to me what you just said about him trying to be his friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, to me, when I was reading it, it was like, I feel like they're just having a father-son issue for the sake of having a father-son issue.
Yeah.
Because, of course, he would be sorted into Slytherin. And, of course, they would have issues, because that's what...
You need. You need an issue.
Yeah, like, and... Well, you do need an issue, but I feel like they could have done something better to develop an issue where they just have an issue that's, like, the blandest issue. Like, of course they would have...
Yeah.
And it's okay to have father-son issues, but it's, like, so not creative.
Yeah.
So I guess that it never occurred to me to even think of that.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you're saying it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that does make sense. But I didn't read it that way.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So,
I think that might be conveyed on stage, though.
Yeah.
Because the nuances of body language is not conveyed via script.
You know what? You just made me think of something. So I was watching... So this will tie into our full discussion. There's a thing called ludonarrative dissonance, and this is a term.
Ooh,
yes.
That's a mouthful.
Oh, yeah. It's used with video games. Basically, what it means is that, say, a video game, there's a video game series that I love called Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
And in Uncharted, the main character, Nathan Drake, is made out to be this, like, heroic character who is not like the bad guys. He doesn't, you know, unjustly kill, and he does good, and he always is honest.
He's a thief, though.
Well, he's a thief, but he's a good thief, you know? He thieves for whatever.
Anyways, yeah. Go on.
So, but when you actually are playing the game, you are killing lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ludonarrative dissonance is when the game's philosophy doesn't mesh with the game's gameplay.
Mm.
And I think that can be said for a lot of different mediums.
Yeah.
Like with this one, what you just said, well, maybe it's conveyed in the play. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is, but what's conveyed in the text? We're having two different things conveyed. The text is saying something, mm-hmm. but the actors are giving us something else.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting, and that's maybe why we would have to see the play.
Yeah, agreed.
But, you know, anyway.
Right. Do you have any other notes before we finish this scene? That was basically them having a conversation of a parent showing their concern.
Yeah. No.
You know, I just want to say these last couple of lines.
Okay.
Albus says, I don't think Scorpius said, but when we returned after failing to fix the first task, I was suddenly in the Gryffindor house. Nothing was better between us then either. So the fact that I'm in Slytherin, that's not the reason for our problem. It's not just about that. Harry, no, I know. It's not just about that. Harry looks at Albus. Are you okay, Albus? Albus, no. Harry, no. Norm, nor me. So that's heavy. That's really heavy. Mm. And I thought that was a very important character development because they're both coming to the realization that there's something deeper than just being in the Slytherin house.
Right. Good realization, but at the same time, I'm like, yeah, no effing kidding. Like, God. Effing stupid.
I know. We have such an issue with Harry.
Anyway, yeah.
So, Act 3, Scene 12. Mm. Dream, Cedric's Hollow... Godric's Hollow, the graveyard. And this is...
Oh, this is the... Do you have a one sentence somewhere that you're thinking
Harry
of?
Potter and Visions from the Beyond.
Nice.
I'm just going to say it that way.
You're better at it than me, so good.
Only because it's a dream, so I'm just like, sure, let's pull this out of my ass.
Like, whoa, there we go. So this is when we get a dream where Petunia takes Harry to his parents' grave. So,
yeah. Do you think this actually happened?
It's hard to say, because if it did happen, I have lots of problems with it. Because it doesn't make sense.
Oh, yeah, because he never visited their grave
Right,
before.
He had never been there.
Correct.
So
okay.
I am led to believe it was just a dream. But honestly, this play defies all kinds of logic that was presented in the Harry Potter books. So as far as we know, I don't think there is an answer.
That's very true. It might be a repressed memory, too.
Right.
That like, is so, coming up because, like, that memory he had of wetting the bed.
Right.
That, like, we don't have that and might be repressed and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, so, but I like the dream.
I like the dream, too. I wish it were real.
Yeah, because it's very interesting. I like the interaction. I do. When I think about the books and I think, oh, yeah, this would never work in the books. But I think outside of the books is something to think about. I really like it. I don't know.
So do you want to describe what's happening in the dream so people know?
Yeah. So to refresh myself. So Aunt Petunia took Harry to see his parents' grave. And he is looking around and he sees their gravestone covered in flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And Aunt Petunia is saying, you know, that they're their last living relatives. And to Harry, you know, she tells him that they weren't popular. But he's wondering, you know, oh,
why
they weren't popular.
So many flowers?
Yeah. So, and then we get, I think that's it.
Her answer for the flowers is that somebody's playing a trick, stealing everyone else's and putting them on their grave. And Harry's pointing out a lot of inconsistencies. Like, Lily and James, what you did, we'll never forget.
Right.
And Lily and James, your sacrifice, ... And we hear Voldemort's voice saying, "I smell guilt. There is a stench of guilt upon the air." And so that's interesting because the guilt is Petunia's.
Right.
Because she's been lying and she's continuing to lie and saying that Lily, like, repelled people by mm-hmm. her personality mm-hmm. and all that type of stuff. And it's just, it's interesting. And it feels that, like, Petunia heard this. So she's telling Harry to get away from there.
Right.
She pulls him back and Voldemort's hand rises from the Potter's gravestone. I knew it. This place is dangerous. The sooner we leave Godric's Hollow, the better. So, like, it's really interesting, that type of, like, dynamic, because we do know Petunia has a lot of guilt, mm-hmm. especially portrayed in the seven books when she gets that howler from Dumbledore saying, "Remember your promise," mm-hmm. you know? And, like, I like this chapter because when people talk about the abusive relationship Harry had with his aunt and uncle, you don't really see it. It's right. all kind of thought of, like,
yeah, for sure.
For sure. And especially because Harry isn't as fucked up as an abused child would be.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So it's kind of like glazed over, but not really fleshed out.
I agree. Yeah.
But when you get something like this, mm-hmm. that's when you get something like this, it yeah. really pulls into light, like, what could have been. And I find yeah. that very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it would have been nice to have more kind of interactions like this. Mm-hmm. Obviously not with this. I don't think Petunia would have taken him.
Oh, no.
I feel like this is why this gets into fan fiction-y territory for me, because I think it's trying to make Petunia out to be something much better in our heads than what she actually is.
Yeah.
And that's where my problem comes. But again, the scene, like you said, the interactions are great. Just, I don't know.
So at the end of this dream, you hear, like, Voldemort say, "Do I still see with my eyes, Harry Potter?" And you hear Albus going, "Dad, Dad,
Dad."
There are some words in Parseltongue that we don't know. He's coming, a scream. And the voice of Voldemort going, "Nah."
That was good.
Thank you.
Nice. Oh, yes. All right.
So let's see where this goes.
Let's see where this goes. Okay. Act 3. Oh, do you have anything else to say?
No, that's all my notes. Do you have any other notes?
No, I'm good. So Act 3, Scene 13.
Mm-hmm.
Harry and Ginny Potter's house, kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Harry after the dream. Ginny's waking him up and saying, you know, "You were screaming."
Why are they in the kitchen?
I think it's kind of like that. Remember that one scene where it's that staircase?
Yeah, whether or not they're, like, walking or, yeah. like, he's sleepwalking or something.
Maybe she's in the kitchen and then she hears him screaming and then she walks up there to hit the room. Maybe there's a staircase, but it doesn't tell us that.
No.
I don't know.
It's in the kitchen.
Did he fall asleep at the kitchen table?
Maybe. That's a good interpretation. Let's go with that.
Okay.
And So Harry is in a horrible state.
Horrible.
Petrified by what he thinks his dreams are telling him. And then he tells Ginny that the dreams haven't stopped. What do you have to say about this?
Actually, you know what? It says here, but I was never in Godric's Hollow with Petunia. So that confirms. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it's not. So it's a dream. Definitely a dream, not a memory.
So I forgot about that note. So that's interesting. Maybe I just missed it. So Ginny's freaked out by what Harry's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry basically says that Voldemort is still, like, here. He's still present. And he's in his dream. He saw Voldemort and Albus.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about what Voldemort said. And Ginny's like, "Albus is still in danger?" And Harry's like, "I think we all are."
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun!
And Harry pulls out the line that I found weird. Mm. Not weird, but something of note in the last scene. That "I smell guilt. There's a stench of guilt upon the air." Mm. So do you think that's also talking about Harry and how he reacts to Albus?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what it's getting at. But, like, mm-hmm. fill me in. I don't know what he's supposed to be feeling guilty about, that he's not being a better parent.
He's a bad parent to Albus. Like, yeah. He's just straight up bad, you yeah. know? Like, he's not... It's hard when you have multiple kids.
Right.
Because it's like teaching. Not every kid receives, like, criticism and stuff the same way. So you have to parent different to each child. But if you parent different to each child, the child's going to wonder why.
Right.
You know? So I know it's always a thing. It's like you have to be the same parent to each kid. But in reality... You really can't. You have to cater so they understand.
Right.
It's like when you're teaching, you know.
I'm wondering if my issue, I'm just realizing this, what you just said about having multiple children. Mm-hmm. We never see Harry being a parent to the other kids.
No.
So that's another problem I'm having, that we don't mm-hmm. have that example to see how he is.
Yeah.
All we have is his stuff with Albus. So that's why I guess what you just said is really insightful, because mm-hmm. I never thought about it that way once again.
And also it's... Like, it's hard to do it in a play like this because it's not a novel. You can't have all of those multiple viewpoints.
Which, you know? But you know what?
Other plays do, though.
I was going to say, I feel like they could. There's, like, for example, this scene. I feel like this scene could be summed up in another scene in a word. Or not a word, but like a sentence. Mm-hmm. Harry had a dream again.
Yeah.
I mean, as nice as that scene was.
Mm-hmm.
It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, give us more to give us that dynamic mm-hmm. of the father-son thing. It's just not enough. But maybe when you see the play, I guess the acting and stuff,
yeah,
you know.
We're not going to keep killing that point because, like, we're probably never going to see the play.
You know, and that's a shame. Yeah, I really wish.
Unless it's off Broadway.
I was going to say, I would really like to see it, but, like, if I'm going to go to New York to see a play, like, mm-hmm. I'm seeing Hamilton, okay? I'm not seeing Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, all right? Don't do that to me.
Don't do that to me.
But yeah, so...
Do you have any notes on this one? I don't even know. Do you have notes at all for this?
My only note is this makes no sense. And the reason I wrote that is because it... I already know how the play ends, but at this point, like, this makes no sense in the Harry Potter universe. I think at this point, though, I feel like I should just throw out what I know about the Harry Potter universe and just let it go. So, sure, it makes sense. Sure.
Sure, let's go with that.
Yeah, because, but like, in terms of what I...
It could make sense, though, because they did alter time. So, Voldemort still has a presence.
I know. We hate time. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's what we got at, so I won't, you know... I won't rehash it. It's just the circle thing. That's all I'll say. And that's why I hate this play. Anyway, sorry. I'm a bitter Harry Potter fan. I'm sorry. What can I say? What about you? What are your...
That was it. It's okay. Just that note, that one line that Voldemort says about the guilt is something I want to pay attention to for the rest of the thing because it's mentioned twice now.
Right. Okay.
So.
Cool.
All right, Act 3, Scene 14, Hogwarts, the Slytherin Dormitory.
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I made that, like I was about to go, bow, chicka, wow, wow, but, like, why?
I think this is funny, though, because it's queerbaiting.
Oh, is it? I didn't even know.
I don't think it is, but because it's in the dormitory with the boys.
Gotcha.
That's why.
Gotcha.
I think it's really funny how this scene opens. Mm-hmm. Scorpius leans ominously over Albus's headboard. Aren't there headboards, like, against the wall? So, like, I'm imagining him, like, creeping up between the headboard and the wall and just leaning over. Yeah.
Which actually is kind of queerbaiting if you think about it. Like, because it's like, hey. Like, leaning over. How
he's
you doing?
He's slithering into his bed.
Nice one.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes indeed. So, but I do think... What is this page? I'm trying to find what he says. I love what Scorpius says on page 210, where he says, "You know, it's the strangest of things, but ever since being in the scariest place imaginable, I'm pretty much good with fear. I am Scorpius the Dreadless. I am Malfoy the Unanxious."
Good.
That just made me laugh. Among many lines of Scorpius's that make me just... gush with love for him.
I know. I don't think we're ever gonna hate Scorpius. He's so good.
Yeah, it's just there's only actually, you know what, it's toward the end, there is one line that does bother me about Scorpius.
Oh no.
One line. just one. That's it, folks. Don't get mad at me. All right, so yeah,
I think the next little bit of lines from Scorpius is also very good. Mm-hmm. Scorpius, when Rose came up to me today in potions and called me breadhead, I almost hugged her. No, there's almost no... Oh, wait, what? No, there's... no, there's no almost about it. I actually tried to hug her, and then she kicked me in the shin.
Scorpius.
Rose has that Weasley anger, though.
Yeah, that's true. I guess she does, yeah.
Or is it Hermione? Because she did punch...
Yeah, but that's when she was overtired and she was like, stressed out. Yeah, so that was a different side of Hermione. I think
that was her true side. Because, you know...
No.
Yeah?
No. True side...
Brittany.
What's the expression? Drunk thoughts, sober words, or something like that? Drunk words, sober thoughts?
Oh, yeah,
That's what it was. She was drunk, and her actions were what they were meant to be. She's a Slytherin. Anyway.
So, there's this part on page 211 also. I'm trying to find it. So Albus seems to be confused... Why Scorpius, after going to this alternate timeline and being super popular, why he decided to go back in time and go back to his original time period where... I'll read the part. I'll read Scorpius's line first. Cedric was a different person entirely. Dark, mm-hmm. dangerous. My dad doing anything they wanted him to. And me, I discovered another Scorpius, you know. Entitled, angry, mean. People were frightened of me. It feels like we were all tested and we all failed. And then Albus says, but you changed things. You had a chance and you changed time back. Changed yourself back. And I'm like, Albus, why would you say that? Like, time was so much worse then. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that, like, he might have been in a time where he was more, like, popular and mm-hmm. celebrated. But, like, dude, do you understand why this happened?
Yes. But do you think that this is what Albus always wanted? You know, he wanted the popularity to be accepted, to be powerful.
But still, come stupid.
It shows depths to Albus, though.
Depths to Albus.
Depths to Albus.
Death to Albus. I like that. No, like, okay, so I can get behind that. Because God knows he needs some more depth. But, like, at the same time, like, just self-actualization or whatever the term is, like understand that the world would be so much worse with Voldemort. Like, you can still want popularity and not want that reality. Albus. I'm just calling out his BS. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right.
He's also 14.
You know what? When I was 14...
We're in our late 20s.
When I was 14, I was very much aware
of
that.
We have over a decade of experience over this child.
Yes, but 14 years old, I still think you're aware enough. Like you can still want... Like, there are things that I want and I wish I had, but, like, I don't wish to have Nazi Germany.
Yeah, but
Germany.
That's also you.
When I was 14,
but
I
But that's
didn't.
Also you. That's what I'm saying. Like...
But I don't
if
think...
If it were a white supremacist at 14 years old...
Yes.
If they had the opportunity to do that, you don't think that they'll capitalize on it?
Are you saying that Albus is a...
I'm saying he's not one. I'm saying I don't know enough about this child to say he's definitely not one. I know.
I don't
nothing.
Even know how to respond to that because I don't think that's what the play's getting at all.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that he definitely is.
Well, no,
a
not that. Yeah.
I'm just saying that we don't know how we see, obviously, how Scorpius reacts to a different timeline in which this is all horrible. But we don't know how Albus would react because Albus didn't go back to a time like that.
Yeah, but that's still... I feel like we're forgiving this book way too much in that regard.
I don't... Like I said, I think that adds depth to Albus. I don't think it forgives him of anything. I think it makes him more scary, to be honest. I think it makes him darker.
I think it's an attempt to make him darker. I'm sorry. I don't like
it. Fine.
I think it's dumb. Yeah. I don't like... It's just very artificial to
Again,
me.
Again, I'm playing devil's advocate to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't like any of it. Like, it's just cheap to me. That's all.
Well, how do you feel about the next lines then? Albus talks, go ahead. Yeah, you know exactly where I'm going.
Yeah.
Albus, but you changed things. You had a chance and you changed time back. You changed yourself. Scorpius, only because I knew what I should be. Albus digests it. Albus, do you think I've been tested too? I have, haven't I? No, not yet.
Right.
And I think that shows.
Yeah, for sure.
The depth. Because, like,
the difference, yeah.
Albus is craving the change.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've had the chance and you changed time back. And Scorpius, I know what I should be. So Albus is sitting there going, so I am who I should be now in the present time. But he doesn't like himself now in the present time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So
yeah.
That's why he's fighting with this idea of would he actually change it? Mm-hmm. You know?
Right. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Scorpius says something really funny, and I'm trying to find it because I wrote Scorpius got jokes, but where is it? He makes a pun. Where did I see this?
Is it right here? No one can do what we did, Albus. No one. No, slightly grandly. It's time that time turning becomes a thing of the past.
Maybe. Guess
because that's kind of funny. You're quite proud of that phrase, aren't you?
That's probably
been working on it. Yeah,
it's like not as funny this time around. because like, because I'm literally searching this page and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I literally read the whole page and I'm sitting here and I'm like, I literally, you can see my notes. I wrote, ha, Scorpius got jokes, punny boy. But I'm looking and I'm like, I
can you please read the line then? Because I want to keep this in.
Where is it? I can't even find it. Okay. All right. Okay. So, okay. Okay. So it says, no one, this is Scorpius, no one can do what we did, Albus. No one. No. Slightly grandly, he says. It's time that time turning became a thing of the past. Albus, you're quite proud of that phrase, aren't you? Scorpius, been working on it all day. Okay. It's funnier now. You know why I missed it? Because it's all the way at the bottom.
It's very small.
I should have wrote 212 to 213 because that's what threw me off.
Oh, it is your notes.
It is my notes. It's my notes. My notes, you know, I have a problem because I write them. I'm like, oh, I'm sure this will. I'll remember what I was talking about.
Oh, I'm dying.
And then I actually go back and I'm like,
So in relation to that line.
Yes.
Scorpius reveals that he does, in fact, have the time turner. He lied.
Yes. Sorry.
You're so funny. Sorry. He lied and didn't actually lose it at the bottom of the lake.
Correct. Correct.
Bum, bum, bum. So they have another opportunity to go back.
Oh, man. That's what I want. More time travel.
More convoluted plot lines. Huh.
This book knows me. Knows me so well.
But they agree that they should destroy it.
Yes. So that did make, when I was first reading, I was like, oh, thank God. And then I thought, you know,
we still have another act to
yeah.
go.
Like, that's not, it's one of those things, like, okay, like, this might, I know you don't really play video games, so this is a me thing, but when I play video games, sometimes I'll get to a part and I'm like, this is, looks terrifying, but I know it's mm-hmm. going to be a boss battle, and then it kind of, like, goes
oh, there's more health everywhere? Okay. Yeah. I can upgrade my weapon? all right.
Yeah. And I'm kind of like, well, you know, maybe it's just like a cutscene. Maybe I'll just get to watch it. Like, maybe they'll just fight him on screen and I'll be fine, like, every single time. And then it happens and I'm like, I should have known.
I should have known better. I should have stocked up.
Yep. So, you know, it happens. Do you have any more notes?
Nope.
All right. We're actually doing pretty good on time. So, mm-hmm. All right. Act 3, scene 15.
Bum, bum, bum.
Hogwarts, Slytherin Dormitory.
Mm-hmm. So, this makes me laugh so much. They just left Hogwarts.
Yep.
Harry and Ginny. Because we start off with Harry and Ginny move quickly through the dormitory, and Craig Brown. Bowker Jr. trails after them. So Harry and Ginny just left like a few hours ago. He had a dream. They wake up. And, like, they're here again. Like, parents don't go to Hogwarts this often.
Right.
How did they get in there? Did they come through the flu system again? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Silliness. It's all silliness.
It is. Silly. Silly parents. Yeah. Jenny, she's like, she says to Harry, I kind of love this when she's asking him, you came to talk to, because she's talking about the conversation that Harry and Albus had a few scenes ago. And she's like, what did you say to our son, Harry? And he's like, I tried to be honest, like you said. I didn't say anything. And you controlled yourself? How heated did it get? I don't know. You think I scared him away again? I can, and she's like, I can forgive you for one mistake, Harry, maybe even two. But the more mistakes you make, the harder to forgive you it becomes. Which is weirded wordly. Wait. Oh my God. Did I just say that?
Weirded wordly.
Worded wordly.
You said weirded wordly.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I'm not
worded
even mad.
Weirdly.
I love when I do it. it creates humor. Ha ha.
Ha ha.
So, yeah, I wrote go Jenny. Boom, go Jenny.
Because... I do feel that that is an important line because it's a parallel to how Harry spoke out of turn with Albus and how easy it was for him to have slip out, like, why can't you be more like James kind of thing.
Right.
You know, or the, no, it was the, sometimes I don't wish, sometimes I wish you weren't my father, sometimes I wish you weren't my son.
Yeah.
So how easy, like, in the heat of moment, it just slips out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see that again reflected to Ginny, to her husband. So I think that's really, really neat.
It is
parallel.
Neat. I really love Ginny.
I do. I think she's a good character in this.
Yeah, I think this is the Ginny that I wish we would have gotten more of. I mean, we did get her, but like
this
there
is
just
a much,
wasn't enough.
This is a much older Ginny, obviously, and so she's a mother now, and like she's a career woman, and she's been a wife for a couple decades, you know. So it's I like this one of her as well, though.
She also doesn't feel. I always felt another reason I didn't like her in the actual books is that she always felt just kind of like this.
Afterthought.
Yeah, an afterthought, a side piece, kind of like, of course Harry has to end up with a girl, and of course she's gonna end up, or he's gonna end up with the girl in the Weasley family, like, if not Hermione, then Ginny, you know. So that's why I never really liked her.
Yeah.
But you know what? I gotta tell you.
Hmm.
When I wrote for MuggleNet, I wrote an article. And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. I totally forgot about this.
Did it creep up again?
Well, I was going through my Tumblr favorites, and I had favorited all my articles that I wrote for because they posted them. And I found it, and my theory was what would make Ginny a better character. And actually, I love and hate this theory because I don't think it would work, but at the same time, I'm interested. My theory was that Ginny would be a better character if she had more screen time. How would she get more screen time? Make her Ron's twin.
Ooh.
Because then everything with Ron would still make sense. They would have their daughter. He would still be possibly, you know, have the same issues with his family. Now, again, I'm not sure how I can get behind that.
I would like that if she was in a different house.
Yeah.
Because the twins were twins.
Right.
And if she were Ron's twin, you need a degree of separation.
Right, I agree.
So stick her in a different house.
But then house should we be?
Slytherin.
Yeah. Oh, that wouldn't work, though, unfortunately.
She would probably be in Ravenclaw.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay. I don't even know what to
say. Which would be a nice parallel. Oh, not parallel, but which would be a nice, like, transfer of love interest from Cho Chang to Ginny because they're both in Ravenclaw.
And they might be, well, I guess Cho's a year above Harry, but they could still possibly be friends in the same house.
And can you imagine the competition between Ginny and Cho on the Quidditch pitch?
Mm-hmm.
Because now they both like the same boy and they're both on the same team.
Right. Because I always thought it was unfair for Ginny that she didn't get that interaction with Harry.
Oh, on the Quidditch team?
Quidditch. And just in general, she doesn't... She's always a story point, but she's not able to have her own...
Yeah.
You know, everything that happens to Ginny happens because of Harry. It's not
Can you imagine both of them being... Because she was a seeker, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Both of them being seekers on the same pitch, and she's just as competitive as he is because she's had six brothers before her.
Right.
She has to make the name for herself.
And that would be character interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I might cut this out, but I'll be quick. I just watched a video on Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
And how, like, that what makes that show so great is how character is developed through interactions. So it talks about Toph. It's focused on her.
I love Toph.
Mm-hmm. It talked about how independent she was and how she had to learn through talking to Iroh, through working with Katara, her like exact opposite, and Sokka and Aang, that like she had to become a team member, and you actually see her character development. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how good it
is.
Great. And I think that's what we need for Ginny.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting, this play is setting up Ginny as an independent person.
Yes.
And she's not a side piece anymore.
Yeah.
She is a character. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think I love her.
Yeah. I really like her in this as well.
So sorry, I just went on tangent.
No. But I think that all that was very good. And plus, we're still doing good on time. So that's all right. I flipped the page without meaning to. But it's important to also mark Craig in this.
Remember Craig. He's not long for this world. I might cut that out.
Poor Craig. But remember Craig. He is a law abiding. I guess he's a prefect.
I'm assuming
he is wandering around and he's standing up to Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. Good boy.
Good for him.
Saying it's against the rules and it's in the middle of the night and I know who you are, Mr. Potter, but like you have to understand. Like, parents shouldn't be here all the time, especially without permission.
Have you ever seen that SNL skit, I think it is, where, like, Daniel Radcliffe plays Harry Potter again, and he comes back, and he's like, he wants to relive his Harry Potter Hogwarts glory days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's SNL, but some kind of skit.
It's pretty funny.
Pretty funny, yeah.
So does Daniel Radcliffe on SNL for it?
If it is, then he actually
That's pretty
plays.
Funny, then.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Might be SNL. I'll put it in the show notes if I remember.
Same.
All right. So anything else?
No, they're just going to go find Albus because Harry feels that it's important to find him for some reason.
Right. Well, because of the dream.
Yeah, but there was nothing involved in the dream. Just the fact that he feels guilty.
Brittany, it was important.
Sorry.
All right.
Moving forward.
Yeah. All right. Act 3, scene 16. Hogwarts Owlery.
Albus Potter, the idiot. Albus Potter, and let's just get this shit over with.
I know.
Albus Potter, and why do you do things without talking to others? Albus Potter and the person without fully developed plans.
Fully developed brain. That was not right. Sorry.
God damn it. So we're Scorpius and Albus are up in the owlery.
Owlery, right? Am I saying that right?
I think so, but it's hard. It's not a natural word.
Owlery. I think
owlery.
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 Owlery. Oh, wait, no, I'm not
They're
saying
in the
it.
Owl Tower.
Yeah, that's great. The Owl Tower. The Tower of the Owls.
It's still hard. Owl. I can't owl. Say owl.
It's kind of like when I try to say horror sometimes, but it sounds like horror. Horror.
Oh, horror.
Like they're like, what are you saying?
I hate that horror movie.
It's like, what? What? Anyway. So, yeah, they're in the owlery.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, Albus wrote a letter to Delphi and it got to her so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So not sure how that happened. Must have been a really fast owl.
Yeah.
Super fast, because I'm assuming they were in bed, him and Scorpius, and then Harry had the dream. And this is, I guess, is this still the middle of the night?
Yes. I think it happened. What's the word? Congruently.
Right.
So while they're discussing how to get rid of the time turner.
Mm-hmm.
Harry's waking up.
Correct. Yeah.
Because I think they get there the same time. They're there. They're looking for him, and they're already in the owlery.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I agree, yeah.
So Albus and Scorpius are discussing how to get rid of the time turner.
And, yeah.
And that's how we discover that Albus wrote the letter to Delphi.
Because he wanted to include her.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because he felt... He felt it was important because she was a part of this as well. So, you know, Albus, God, you're so dumb. So dumb. Bring back Delphi, whatever. They mentioned the augury again. I don't know if I'm going too far ahead. If you have
I
any
think
notes.
You're going too far ahead.
Okay, because that's on page 219, and I'm realizing it starts on page 216. So, what am I missing?
Scorpius is explaining to Delphi what it was like in that timeline, saying it was horrible. He ruled everything. It was horrible. Delphi, because of what we did, Scorpius, humiliating Cedric turned him into a very angry young man. And then he became a Death Eater. And it all went wrong. Really wrong. And Delphi, a Death Eater and a murderer. So this is where it's really getting into, like, this is where we're seeing Delphi develop into the character we know her to be.
Oh, yeah.
Now. Well, at least in the next act.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and we see, like you said, sort of like little hints are dropped by Delphi, kind of like very subtle things that when you read them, if you didn't know, it seems like she's on their side, seems interested, but when you know what happens, you can definitely feel her interest, like a Death Eater. And she says, and of course, we need to destroy it, but of course, we know.
Yeah, we'll destroy it together. And then we'll go to my uncle and explain the situation. Thank you. Delphi smiles at them, sadly, and then takes the time turner. She looks at it and her expression changes slightly. And mark.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure who said that, but yeah, that's
Albus
right.
Albus says it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, and him saying that.
So does she turn around then?
I don't know. I mean, it says, let me see. It just says her cloak has loosened, an augury tattoo is visible on the back of her neck.
She must have turned around.
Right.
She must have taken the time turner and turned.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Albus, what's it called? I'm sorry, not Albus. Scorpius. He's like an augury. And he kind of slowly comes to the realization that he saw that in the alternate timeline, the augury.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something is awry.
Yeah, when does he realize that?
Well, he seems to, like, slowly realize it, like, right on the top of page 219. And he's, like, an augury.
Yeah, and she explains that it's a like a specific type of bird.
Right.
And it's her guardian.
Oh. Yeah. And, let's see. She says that, because Albus asked why she would want a tattoo of that bird. And she says her guardian used to say it was, I guess the augury was crying because it, wait, am I reading that right? I'm sorry.
Her guardian, Delphi, she used to say it was crying because it could see I was going to become, I was going to come to a sticky end. She didn't like me much. What's that?
Euphema?
Euphema rule. She only took me in for the gold. And then Albus, not knowing anything about any history in the wizarding world, is just like, oh, that's cool. I might get one too.
Ooh.
And then Scorpius drops this line. The rules were pretty extreme Death Eaters.
Bum, he knows. Bum,
bum. Yeah, it's clicking. 1,000 thoughts inside of Scorpius's head. So Albus is still like, la, 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 la. And Scorpius is, what does he call himself? Malfoy the Unanxious. Scorpius the,
oh, I forget.
What was it?
Let me see. Scorpius.
Scorpius the Dreadless.
Is that it?
Yeah. He becomes super brave at this moment. And he's like, give it back. Mm-hmm. Give us back the time turner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, boom. Let's Boom. Go, Scorpius!
Whoa! And I just wrote, Albus as dumb AF. That's what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Because, come on, dude. Really? You didn't notice this. But I guess, you know, I guess he wouldn't. That's fine.
He's enamored with this woman.
Right. He totally is. Which, of course, he is.
Yeah.
I just wrote in my notes, wow, I did not expect this. Crazy. What? Did you... I just, out of curiosity, when you first read this, like, did you think in the beginning something was up with Delphi or did you? Yeah, same.
Almost instantly. Because, like, she's just weird.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit too eager for everything.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially, I don't remember if you remember in the one episode where she's like, oh, I'm not one for breaking the rules. I'm like, yeah, but you dived into this.
Right,
like,
right.
You're contradicting yourself. I don't know. I just didn't like her character. And, like, I didn't think it was this extreme. But by the time I got to this part of the play, I'm like, of course it would be. It needed to be something. Right. Someone.
Yeah, of course. So Then let's see. On page 220, I wrote, okay, so now I'm going to have to find this.
Sure.
Because all my notes say is, but why? Oh, wait, it's probably a line. Okay, here we go. So Delphi says a spell, I think it is. She says Folgari.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Albus is propelled to the floor, his hands tied by the same brutal binding. And that is the first spell I've had to use on you. I thought I'd have to use plenty more, but you're far easier to control than Amos. Children, particularly male children, are so naturally pliant, aren't they? Now, let's sort this mess out once and for all. And then Albus says, but why? But what? But who are you? And you just gotta laugh. I read that and I'm like, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
I just thought that was a funny line. Yeah. I don't know. What else?
We figure out that Delphi is this part of this organization.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That Scorpius was a part of in the past.
Right.
In the alternate universe.
Correct.
That she kind of wants to bring back because she wants Voldemort to be actually living. So I know this might go into a little bit of tangent, and I apologize, but it does serve as a question. So if Delphi goes back to the third timeline again to change it so that actually she would have to go back twice again to make sure that Cedric is embarrassed enough to become a Death Eater, so Albus will then come into the timeline again with all the same knowledge of how to bring it back to normal.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Unless she kills Scorpius in the third timeline, but then that's not going to be very favorable for her because Scorpius is glorified, right?
This is so confusing,
but it doesn't happen, but right. It's just interesting to think about,
right?
Yeah
definitely.
All right, so I don't have any other notes, do you?
No, I don't.
So let's move on to Act 3, Scene 17.
Gotcha.
So we're at the Ministry of Magic in Hermione's office.
Mm-hmm.
Ron is sitting with her.
Oh, yeah.
Eating porridge, which is a weird nighttime. I think it's nighttime. Who knows?
Who knows? Maybe early morning?
It might be.
Yeah.
I can't get over it, really. The fact that in some realities, we aren't even, married. It's like as he's sitting there with a bowl of porridge and his wife is working.
Right. It's like, I can't imagine it either.
I just imagine him like getting slop all over him. It's like, why wouldn't you want to marry me? And this, you're making Ron dumb again, but oh well.
I just cracked up at this part on the same page. Hermione says, if this is your way of saying you want a marital break, Ron, then to be clear, I will skewer you with this quill. And then Ron says, sorry, that was really loud. Shut up. Will you shut up for once? And I'm like, oh. I really want to know how that was portrayed in the play.
I think it's more sarcastic. Like, oh, shut up. Will you shut up for once?
I just thought it was so funny. I read that and I was like, oh. I just wrote LOL. Ron?
Because he's being funny. Like, he's like, I mean, we've been together for so long. I mean, married for so long. I mean, so long. So, like, I think he's being really sarcastic here.
I'm sure he is.
And, like, then being like, shut up, you broad.
Yeah. I'm like,
Ronald it would be Weasley. Interesting to see how he would portray that, though, the actor.
Yeah, because, like I said, when I read that, I was like,
I think it's cute. He wants to do a marriage renewal.
Yeah, that is cute.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, stop. I want to do a marriage renewal.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. That's not what I'm talking about. Yeah. No, I hate marriage renewals. They're
How
stupid.
Dare you?
They're stupid.
And he's like, I love you, Hermione Granger. And whatever time says, I like the opportunity to say it in front of lots of other people. Again, sober.
Yeah, that's another thing. I wonder if this play, this little detail.
Mm-hmm.
Was a thing from Rowling because she said later that she wasn't happy with pairing Ron and Hermione up in the end. Do you remember that?
I remember that she said she was going to kill Ron and have Harry and Hermione together.
So this is different.
Yeah.
This is comments she made after the books, but like nothing to do with Ron's death.
Yeah.
She like made a comment that she wishes she never put Ron and Hermione
together. I
think
that's stupid. I think they're a good pairing.
That's interesting because I used to. The more I read it, the more I don't. Sorry, that was loud. It sounded loud in my headphones, sorry. But I don't like that she said that.
Yeah, and I don't, because a lot of people ship them.
Yeah, it's just
that's the original character, like, pairings. So then Harry, Ginny, and Draco come bursting in.
Yeah.
And they talk about how Albus is missing again. Scorpius, too. They check the entire school, and they're gone.
Is this like a sitcom where it's kind of like, oh, well, they're missing again. Laugh track, laugh track, laugh track, you know?
It's very possible.
Oh, wouldn't that be great to have a Harry Potter sitcom?
No, it would not.
It would not. So, but, you know, still.
Yeah. And then Ron's talking about getting drinks with Neville.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because they were talking about... Hold on. Albus is missing again. Immediately. No, you won't. It's fine. Albus, I saw him the other night. It's all good.
Oh, right.
Where? They're in Hogsmeade and saying that he saw Albus with a girl. Right? Yeah. An older girlfriend. Then he saw them... Okay. A cracking one at that. Gorgeous silver hair. Saw them on the roof together near the owlery with Scorpius playing the gooseberry. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either.
Nice to see my lovely potions being used well, I thought. And I hate the idea of love potions.
I agree.
Like, that is not fun. No. That's a date rape drug.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
100%.
It bothers me. I mean, Ron... I'll just be honest, like, Ron does say a lot of problematic things in the regular book series.
Mm-hmm.
It's very problematic to me that he saw Albus with an older girl and he didn't even think that's weird. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, like, oh, well, he's my probably potions? Using my love potion. It's like, really? So.
Yeah. And then Harry's like, her hair, it was silver and blue. Yep. Silver and blue. Yep.
Silver and blue.
And Harry connects that it's Delphi.
Dun, dun, dun.
And so then they go to see Amos.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that.
Cancel
part.
The goblins.
You know what you just made me think of when you said that?
Hmm.
What's the Amanda show? Bring in the dancing lobsters.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
All right, so.
That was it. Basically, it's just to bring them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring the whole cast together to then run to another scene.
Again.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right, so. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. Act 3, Scene 8.
St. Oswald's Home for Old Witches and Wizards, Amos's Room.
Yeah.
So this is when, obviously, we reunite with Amos Diggory.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they ask him if he knows where their sons are. And correct. Amos is like, why would I know where they are?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, I love Draco's lines. Don't play the senile. He doesn't say, it's like senia.
Where is
it? I cannot say that. Page 225, Draco's last line on that page. Don't play the senility card. Am I just...
Senility?
I feel like this is a word. Yeah. I won't think too hard.
Yeah, don't try to be senile.
Exactly. Yeah, don't play senile with us. That's what I'll say. Old man, we know you've been sending him owls. And so Amos denies it. And then Harry says, you know, he threatens him, but he's like, Amos, you're not too old for Azkaban.
Which is shitty. Poor Amos.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I guess he really thinks that he has something to do with this.
Yeah.
And so, which I guess he would think that, considering mm-hmm. everything that's happened. And so then he's like, I have no idea what he talks about. Oh, yeah, because he says, they were last seen in the Hogwarts Tower with your niece. And Amos is like, my niece?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a niece. And
Harry being an asshole. There's no depths to which you won't sink, are there? Yes, your niece. Are you denying that she was... Wait, what? She was there under your expression... expressed instructions.
I love how you just read that. Like, there are no depths to which you won't
sink. There are
sink.
No depths.
That's like Shakespeare. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, so we get the revelation that he doesn't have a niece. Bum, bum, bum. In fact, it almost seems like...
Well, they get the revelations. We would have had that in the previous one when she's like, boys, they're so much easier to manipulate. I haven't even been drinking today. Manipulate than Amos. Mm-hmm. So,
that's
famous
true.
Amos. Famous Amos.
That's
Does he
great.
Have cookies?
You know, probably not, but I think we should make a meme for
famous
this episode. That would be our picture.
Famous Amos.
All right. We're doing it.
There we go.
Nothing problematic about that at all.
No
anyway.
Copyright.
Yeah.
Fine.
So then Draco says we need to find out who this bitch is. Except he says
I
it
wish
a little differently.
He said bitch. Oh my god, that would have been so much fun.
That would have been amazing.
Molly.
Yeah. Dude.
Showing how much Draco's love for his son is the equivalent of Molly Weasley's for her daughter. We gotta find this bitch. Bam, bam, bam.
Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, 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 pew.
I don't know why I just did an air horn.
I don't know. Me neither, because I did it as well. All right,
we echo
so
each other.
Now they all came together, they had the realization, and they're off again.
Off we go to find a wizard. We're off to see the wizard.
Okay, so this doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah.
Because they were at Hogwarts, they got McGonagall involved, we can't find the kids, went to the ministry, got the minister involved, we can't find the kids, went to St. Oswald.
Yeah.
Got Amos involved. We can't find the kids. And now we're Act 3, Scene 19 at the Hogwarts Quidditch pitch.
Correct.
The Quidditch pitch is on the Marauders map. So this must have happened long before they actually went to the school. Because they couldn't find the kids searching the school.
Right.
So what's happening now in Scene 19 must have happened hours ago.
Yes.
Because they would have seen it on Marauder's map.
The only way, and this is me purely playing devil's advocate because I agree with you, the only way that wouldn't be true is because this book doesn't always follow its own rules, its own universe rules. So maybe in this universe, it's not on the map. But I'm playing devil's advocate. Yeah. I agree with you.
Okay.
So,
cool.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Because now we are at Hogwarts Quidditch pitch, where Delphi is clearly enjoying every second of her changed identity. I imagine her, like, flaunting across the stage and, like, kind of being, like, a mix between Bellatrix and Dolores. Mm. Like, having, like, the proper stance of Dolores, but having the insanity of Bellatrix just, like, flaunting around.
I thought at first you were going to say, you know, being a mixture of Bellatrix and, you know, Voldemort. And I'm like, yeah.
That's really funny.
I knew you weren't going to say that because I knew that would, like, be too easy. But, like, in my head, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, Voldemort is a great... She is, like, Voldemort's kid right now, just flaunting in her own pride.
Which
is basically
yeah,
what it is.
You're right. Yeah, totally. So, yeah, we get... They're on this Quidditch pitch because they're going to go back in time to the third task to basically keep Cedric alive. Is that what they're doing?
No, to make sure that Cedric dies. So they're going back to the Triwizard Tournament, the third task.
Oh,
the
that's
maze.
Right, right.
The maze is... This is
well,
where the
she
maze
doesn't
was.
Want, no, she doesn't want that. But they, right? Because
we're
they...
going back for Cedric. So she's going to stop the boys from interfering with Cedric.
Correct. Right.
Yes.
But she is the time turner. So are you okay?
Yeah. I have a weird hangnail.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. Anyways, go on.
Okay, so I'm just trying to make sense of this in my head. Because they don't have the time turner, so they wouldn't be
Duffy
going
does. Ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
So why doesn't she just not... Why does she want to go back again?
To stop them from stopping them.
I'm so confused. Okay, so, but how could they go back to stop her or to stop anything if they don't have the time turner? Why would she have to stop them if they don't have a time turner?
Because they've already already stopped themselves. So this is her stopping them from stopping themselves.
When did they... Wait, but they didn't go to the third task yet. They've only gone the first and second.
Wait, what?
Because they're going to the third task. Hold on, let me... Okay.
You want Voldemort to...
To spare the spare once and for all. We will go back for Cedric, and in doing so, we will resurrect the world you saw, Scorpius. Why are they going back for Cedric? Because they don't want him to die. So she wants to go back.
Okay.
And
spare
keep,
the spare.
So he won't grab the cup. But they go back with her, somehow get separated from her, because they do let him go.
2 hours later.
So, in this chapter, Hogwarts, the Quidditch pitch. So, it isn't on the Marauders map. But we find out that Craig's in this chapter. And then Craig is like, oh, the boys, like, we're looking all over for you. Like, come on back.
Right.
So.
And this would be, you would assume, why is he at the Quidditch pitch? It has to be sometime during the day. Unless, are they looking? But then again, maybe they're looking.
It's right after the dream.
Right. So maybe he's out there looking for them. Maybe that's why he's out there.
Yes. I think he's out there looking for them.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, no, I think you're
right. Okay. But so it happened, let's say it was very early in the morning that he had the dream. So then they went to the Hogwarts, searched the grounds. This is when Craig is also searching the grounds.
Right.
They were like, we can't find them, and go to the ministry. They're from the ministry to Amos's. So this whole time. Okay. I'm not going to say what I'm about to say. So let's set up the scene and I'll finish my thought.
Okay.
So they're on the Quidditch pitch and they're going to go back to the third task, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the third task, why are they going back to the third task?
They're going back because she wants to find out another way to get back to that alternate timeline by humiliating Cedric.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
And having a fresh start. Meaning they already tampered with the first two tasks. She doesn't want to do that. She wants to go back to the third task.
That's actually really smart.
Yeah.
I think that's really smart. So that she is explaining this all to Scorpius and Albus. And she's talking about the prophecy. The prophecy only she knows about.
Yeah.
Yeah. About how, like, well, I know it's stupid. Where is the...
It's, let me see.
Is it before the certain thing?
Yeah, I forget. It's,
No, it's after the certain thing. Is it? Yeah, it's after the certain thing where she says the prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, Delphi tells them that Cedric has to be humiliated and it has to be Albus to do it. And, Scorpius, Albus is like, I'll never do it. Finally being the gallant man that he should be, and he's like, you'll have to use Imperio, blah 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 blah, and Delphi threatens Scorpius. Albus is like, okay, I'll do it. And then Craig walks onto the scene.
Poor Craig, we barely knew ye.
I know. You were just... He's Percy. He's law-abiding.
He is, yeah.
And all he wants to do is the right thing. And he's like, guys, like, come on. What's happening?
Yeah. You know what I just realized?
What?
Craig is like, in Albus's story, Craig is the spare that's killed. That adds a new level.
Spare the spare.
Oh my god.
So...
Yeah.
Craig is killed.
Mm-hmm. Delphi kills him.
Yeah.
And it's pretty awful.
Yeah, she avocrabs his ass.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the finish of my sentence.
Ah.
Craig has been dead this whole time. When they start searching the Hogwarts grounds, Craig, like, went off his own to help search.
Ah.
He died.
Right.
And hasn't reported back to McGonagall.
Right.
Or anyone else as they go try to find Amos. So this kid is just dead on the Quidditch pitch.
That's so awful.
Like, why does no one care enough about Craig to be like, he hasn't reported back yet. Where is he?
Because it's like this play doesn't get, like, the only professor we interact with in this play is McGonagall.
Mm-hmm.
We never talk to Neville.
Snape as well.
Well, okay.
In
you're
alternate.
Right. Yeah, yeah. In alternate. I mean, in this timeline, but you're right. But no Neville. No, any other professor that's there. If we just had one more professor that said, we have all these stupid, pointless scenes at Hogwarts of them coming to Hogwarts and having these conversations that could be summed up in a sentence or two.
Yeah.
If we're going to do that, why not have that little extra detail of saying Professor Sprout says, I will keep watch at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little tiny detail.
Yeah. And couldn't also, like, McGonagall treats Craig like shit.
Yeah,
she
pretty much.
She's so mean to him. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, you're always, like, so, such a pain in the ass, aren't
you? And she
you?
Wouldn't be like that.
No, she isn't. She would say, thank you for your help. Now go on.
Right.
Like, go away.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
It's just, oh, God.
So, they kill Craig.
Kill Craig. And kill honestly, Craig. It does bother me because Craig is such, like, a minuscule character in this play that I think this play, which is, the premise of it is saving Cedric Diggory because he was the spare. I don't think this play gets that Craig is the spare and is literally treated as a spare by the narrative. It's like narrative, again, it's a ludonarrative dissonance thing. Sorry, that's a big word to swallow. But seriously, like, the text says a lot more than you think. Yeah. So, I don't know, pay attention to what you read, kids.
I guess.
But yeah, it's annoying. I feel bad. Poor Craig.
Yeah. So the stupid prophecy is when the spares are spared, then time is turned. When unseen children murder their fathers, then will the Dark Lord return.
I hate this prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
It is so freaking dumb.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not a poet, so I couldn't write something. You know, I couldn't be a J.K. Rowling and write all the things that, like, the Sorting Hat song and what have
Those are so good.
Mm-hmm.
But all the songs and prophecies in this are trash.
Oh, my God. They are.
Bane's prediction.
Yeah.
The Sorting Hat. Now this prophecy. So, I don't know. They just, it wasn't written well. Those things.
Shall we?
Yeah, we have about 15 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, we should probably just stop. Oh, you know what? Look at this. I'm on like 17. I'm like way behind. So I guess I've just been going.
Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. So, yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
Cool. So now we're going to Act 3, Scene 20 at the Triwizard Tournament in 1995. Correct. So they are at the third challenge now. And so this is the third time they're going back then?
Yes, it's the third time they're going
third
back.
Third time they're going back.
Yeah. And we get Ludo Bagman again doing his stupid
his spiel.
Oh my God. I know, like you were saying earlier.
I think it's funny because look how animated he is this third time. For the, for the French.
Yeah.
It's like, give me a chair! And they're like, no.
Yeah. I'd be like, no, too. I'd be like, wow, you are freaking annoying.
The French finally showing us what they're capable of.
Oh,
it's
God.
Just so funny to me. Oh, dear.
Whoa.
What was that? Is that a burp?
No, I went, no. Did I just pull a demon voice?
That was really funny.
Thank you. I've been working on it all week.
Oh, God. That was weird, but I liked it.
Oh, my God.
All right.
So, yeah, we're at the third task. And one thing I wanted to point out is that when they get in... Well, actually, hang on. Oh, yeah. So when they get into the actual maze... There's a very interesting detail that I wanted to bring up, which is that it says, and let me see if I can find the line, because it's a stage direction. Oh, so here it is. It's on page 233. When they're looking for Cedric, there's a stage direction line beneath one of Delphi's lines. And it says, a hedge almost dissects Albus and Scorpius. Mm-hmm. It is important to know, for people who have only seen the movies, that the hedges only move in the movies. They do not move in the books. So right away, this is another thing that bothers me, that J.K. Rowling calls this canon, but it's movie canon, not book canon.
Mm-hmm.
And that even bothers me because I'm that uptight about it. But I feel very strongly. Anyway, that's my note. Continuing on.
Is that your only note for this chapter?
No, I have more, but that's apparently the first one I looked at. What was my second note? We already talked about Ludo Bagman. That was my first note. What about you? What are you thinking right now?
It's just a lot of filler, I feel.
I agree.
Because they keep talking about defying Delphi, and prophecies can be broken. You're mistaken, child. Prophecies are the future. This is where Scorpius fucks up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But if prophecies are... If the prophecy is inevitable, why are we here trying to influence it? Your actions contradict your thoughts. You're dragging us through the maze because you believe this prophecy needs to be enabled. And by that logic, prophecies can also be broken, prevented. Mm-hmm. So
he gives her an idea.
He gives her an idea.
My quick question, not to veer too far off of that discussion, but... it's interesting how time is utilized in this story. Obviously, we have this time turner that only puts you back in time for 5 minute periods of time.
Correct.
5 minutes lasts longer or lasts a lot shorter, depending on when we go back. Like the times when we were in other tasks, they seem to go like that.
Instant.
Where this one lasts so freaking long.
Because they're searching for Cedric.
Right.
In this maze, because they don't know where he is.
Right. So it's just like... Once again, like, it's just so inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, I don't like it. But anyway.
Oh, we have to point out that Delphi, in the last scene that we saw them, she took their wands and threw them.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah, because now we're in this task, and we actually run, Cedric runs into them and Expelliarmus's, Delphi's wand. And then Cedric is asking whether or not they're part of the obstacles, the mazes. Right. And he's demanding them to speak.
Right. That's right. And they...
So this is brilliant because Delphi is bonded and she can't move. And Cedric is questioning the boys. And all they have to do is last a couple more minutes and they're transported back. That's all they gotta do. That's all you gotta do.
You had one job.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even do that. So, you know.
Yeah. And this is actually quite sad.
It is sad.
Because the boys, knowing how this will end.
Correct. Yeah.
Alba says to Cedric, "I'm afraid you have to finish the maze." And Cedric, "Then I shall." And he walks confidently away. Mm-hmm. And I think this is pretty cool because we don't see everything that Cedric does in the maze.
Right.
So this could possibly have happened.
Right.
You know, I think that's a great detail.
And that's the one
sorry, thing. I just read the line.
It's okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I agree with you. It is a nice detail, especially because it's actually a detail that works in mm-hmm. the way time functions in this world. Like, it actually would fit into
yes.
that working.
The canon.
So I actually like that. I think that's cool and it's interesting.
I got choked up about Albus's last transaction with Cedric because it's very emotional when you think about Albus's relationship with his own father. Albus goes, "Cedric, your dad loves you very much." Mm. "Cedric, what?" "Albus, just thought you should know that." "Okay, thank you." And then he moves forward.
Right.
The time begins to turn and they go back, right? Is this where they go back?
We have to try to stop her. We had to go. So, no, they actually don't, because I think they have to be holding on to the time turn. They have to be attached to her. I'm trying to see. Hang on. Because it says the time speeds up, but they're left in that time, I think.
No, they're not. Are they left in that time?
Hang on.
No,
because
She
breaks the time turner.
Yeah.
Because it says we have to go with the time turner. We have to try to stop her, and then she breaks
it. She crushes it. Yes.
But then they have to go back in time somehow.
Well, that she breaks it.
Right. I guess they go back to 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Is that this part, I'm guessing? And we just
Go back to 1981, just not at this moment.
Hang on. Stop me. How do you think no one
time and time stops, turns over. Okay, yeah.
So they are, they just don't know it yet.
Yeah, exactly. So the time turner is spinning. Look at what she's doing. She can't leave us behind. They grab the time turner, and then there's a giant whoosh of light. And they get spit out of whatever time that they're in. Uh-huh. Delphi's like, "Stop me. You think you've stopped me? I'm done with this." And she quotes Scorpius saying how prophecies can be prevented.
Right.
Maybe prophecies can be broken. And she smashes the time turner. and they're stuck where they are.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. So that sucks.
Yeah. And Scorpius is like, yes, and we can't be seen here. Let's get out of here before we're spotted. Mm-hmm. Because the kids don't know where they are, do
right.
they?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Utterly. We're stuck in time. Wherever, whatever time we're in, whatever it is she is planning to do. Hogwarts looks the same. Yes, but we can't be seen here. We need to stop her, Scorpius. I know we do, but how? And that's how the scene ends, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm questioning. We'll have to see once we get to Act 4, but I'm questioning how they get to where they end up getting to, unless I'm forgetting a detail.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, so we'll just
we'll
see.
We'll have to see.
And then for our final scene, Act 3, Scene 21, St. Oswald's home for old witches and wizards, Delphi's room.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the section or the scene where we get a revelation of epic proportions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So they are in, obviously, Delphi's room, and they're looking around.
Which is weird. I know. Delphi has a room in Amos's study, but he never questions that, even when he's out of his spell.
I don't know. It's just weird. And so they're basically looking around to see if anything's hidden so they can find any clues about Delphi.
Mm-hmm.
On page 241, I wrote down Ron's, let's see. Oh, Ron shouting as he hammers on the walls. What are you hiding? What you got?
Like, yeah.
What the F, Ron? Like, come on now.
Silly.
Silly Ronald Weasley. So they're all, like, really thinking. They're all trying to figure out, you know, what could be hidden here. And then Harry says something about, like, what's it called? There's, like, hissing words.
Yeah. So Ginny unscrews a chimney from an oil lamp. There is a breathing out noise. Then it's hissing words. And they all turn towards it. Which I don't know how that...
I know.
How it does that?
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm having a hard time picturing that, but whatever.
Yeah. And then Harry points out that's... I'm not supposed to be understanding. That's parcel tongue.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to get started in that. But anyway... So because he can understand parcel tongue, you know, he basically says it says welcome augury.
I don't understand why an oil lamp says that. Narrative economy, is that what you call it?
It could be. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess it isn't because it has,
to happen.
Of course he would speak parcel tongue. Of course, you know. So, I mean, it could be, honestly.
Yeah. So he speaks back to it, and the room goes dark, and there's fluorescent paints and philosophies everywhere. And so it's the writings of a crazy woman all over the walls, like in black light.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
like a bad hotel room.
Like a bad hotel room. So true. And so they're talking about time turners, and they read the prophecy. Talking about, oh, it's a new prophecy, and Cedric was the spare, and, you know, talked about how when time was turned, it's referencing the time turner. And so then, let's see, who is she?
Oh, God, I hate this.
Oh, please tell.
Okay, Ron, when time is turned, she has that time turner, doesn't she? Their faces sink. Hermione, she must do. That's the second time they did something like that.
I agree. I noticed that too.
That.
It's weird. It's such
she
a weird
must
line.
Do.
Yeah, like do what, Hermione? Like, I get.
She must have.
Right. Like I get.
Have have. Does do.
You know? Yeah. I don't quite understand the logic behind that line. But whatever.
Yeah.
Hopefully they changed it in the actual script. who knows? And then. They realize, let me see, the words revealed on the walls of the... dangerous word, horrible words. I will rebirth the Dark Lord. I will bring my father back. That's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, Voldemort has a daughter? And then Harry's like, no, not that. Anything but that!
Black.
Dun, dun, dun! And that ends Act 3.
Yeah.
All right. So I think it's about time. I mean, it's way past time, but to talk about our sponsor, ooh, Audible, because we're really good at what we do. Audible.com mm-hmm. is the leading provider of audiobooks on the internet with over 180,000 titles to choose from. And today, Audible.com is sponsoring this episode of Books as Bad as Twilight, where if you go to audibletrial.com/BAT, you can get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial to audible.com. Mm-hmm. And of course, we recommend you get the Harry Potter books, or at least one of the books, and then stay subscribed to Audible so you can get the other six.
Correct.
Because it's a great service. What were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, we recommend a lot of the Harry Potter ones, but has there been one you listened to recently that you want to recommend?
Recently, I have listened. Okay, well, I'll tell you my most recent one. Yeah. I recently listened to the new Jim Crow, it's called. It's talking about mass incarceration and the war, the drug war, and how that has put a lot of black mm-hmm. men specifically in prison. It's a really interesting...
The war on drugs was a false war.
Oh, yeah. It's... I mean, I already knew about it, so that's why, like, I was... It sheds light on it. It's really mm-hmm. interesting. So that was what I most
recently... Don't listen to the man, guys. Don't. Take life into your own hands. Fight against the... Patriarchy.
I mean, yeah, that's
it was white male that enacted these laws.
Oh, mostly, yeah, it's definitely a patriarchal thing. Yeah, so definitely the new Jim Crow, definitely check that out because it's a really great read and a very enlightening read.
Enlightening.
If you aren't familiar with that topic, definitely worth your time.
Talk about the difference in cocaine? How one cocaine was more popularized among whites and than the black community because one was cheaper.
She touches on it, yeah.
So one holds more of a heftier sentence than the other, even though it's the same drug.
Yeah, it's very interesting too because maybe I'll put a link in the show notes because I listened to a podcast through a university mm-hmm. and they discussed the book. And
oh, that's pretty cool then.
They brought up a lot of great points. If you want to kind of a springboard, if you will, into the book. I'll definitely put the podcast episode in the show notes because you can listen to that. I don't remember. I never listen to it. When I read a book, I like to listen to podcasts about it, so I usually look it up. So that's how I found it. So okay. I forget what it's called.
That's smart, though.
I love doing that. So I'll definitely link to it because, like I said, it's a nice springboard if you are like, I'm not sure if I'll like this book. I think you should listen to it anyway, but still, if you're not sure... listen to this podcast because I think it summarizes her points, but it still leaves room for you to actually listen to the whole thing.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah. So anyway, that is audibletrial.com/BABAT to get your free 30-day trial mm-hmm. as well as a free audiobook of your choice.
Yeah.
So that ends our episode talking about Act 3 of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
I do like how this act is going, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember how I said, like, I'm actually finally invested in the story. I might not actually like where it's going, but now it's moving quicker. There's development, and like, it's a shame that's happening at the end of the play. It's just like last season where everything happens at the end of the book.
I was just about to say the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just about to say that. So it's interesting that we're kind of meeting this trope once again. And I wonder if this is a trope we'll see a lot in the books we read.
It might be. Because it's disappointing.
It is disappointing because it gives you like a slow build up, and then it has a really fast conclusion, and it's
a disappointing release. I'm talking about orgasming.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I just wasn't sure. So that's kind of I was kind of like, uh huh, like.
We could cut that. That's so funny.
That
to
was
me.
Really. We'll see if I do or not. How do I feel when I'm
sorry,
editing?
Dylan.
Oh God. Oh God. We're definitely cutting it now. I'm not putting that in there. It's like I don't know why I'm getting on my high horse because this podcast is not clean.
Yeah, like, no, this podcast is not clean at all.
So, Brittany, let's talk about our website and all these places where people can find us.
Yes. So our website is BABATpodcast.com. It stands for Books as Bad as Twilight. And if you look and if you go there, you can find links to all of our fun little pages. So we have a Tumblr and an Instagram and a MySpace.
And a MySpace.
I wish. Should we make a MySpace?
I love how both of us realized at the same time.
Oh my God, and fill it with 90s references. We have a Facebook, a page, and a group. You can leave us a voicemail if you want. You can also like send us an email. Please give us any type of review so we know like what you're thinking.
Oh yeah, please do. That helps us.
Yeah, it really does. And like reviews gets our name out there. I know a lot of podcasts ask for that stuff. But, you know, a lot of those podcasts are bigger than we are. So, like, we actually need the help. So,
that's
like,
true.
Actually do it.
I mean, yeah. You're so right.
Did I miss any?
No, I think you're good.
All of our social media.
Oh, yeah. Where can it's, you listen? Well, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'll cut that out.
No, no. I don't care. Where we can listen. You can find us on iTunes and Stitchers and Stitchers. Stitcher and Podbean and Google Play and everything that, like, normal... you can normally listen to podcasts on, except Spotify.
Except Spotify. We're still working on it. It's, look, it's a challenge, folks, okay? But we're going to get there one day.
Yes. You know what? Give us a review. Make us more popular so we could get onto Spotify.
Yeah, folks, come on.
Yeah.
Get to it. For us. I mean, seriously, in all seriousness, like, it'd be awesome to hear from you. If you could just leave us a review, it doesn't take that much time. I've reviewed several podcasts, like, just on a... I'm being serious, like on an honest level. I like reviewing podcasts like that I love. So if you enjoy listening to us, it'd be nice if you left a review. And again, you know, we did have a giveaway going on.
I know.
So, you know.
And no one entered it yet.
So if you guys want to win a book or two.
If you want to win a book.
Yeah.
So that translated to if you guys want to win a book or two.
You got to win a book or two.
I don't know what you're referencing.
It's Oliver Twist the musical. Oliver, you got to pick a pocket or two.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. So image design was Katie Hartung. Check her out. She's pretty cool.
And music is done by Kevin McLeod. Thanks, Kevin. You're awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kevin. And with that... I think we'll end this episode.
Have a good night.
Have a good night, everybody. Bye. See you later. Thank you very much.